Reading the Holy Gospel according to Mark. Then John's disciples and the Pharisees were fasting, and people came and said to him, "Why do John's disciples and disciples the Pharisees fast, but your disciples do not fast?" Jesus said to them, "The wedding guests cannot fast while the bridegroom is with them, can they? As long as they have the bridegroom with them, they cannot fast. The days will come when the bridegroom is taken away from them. Then they will fast on that day. No one sews a piece of unshrunk cloth or an old cloak. Otherwise the patch pulls away from it, the new from the old, and the worst tear is made. No one puts new wine to old wineskins. Otherwise the wine will burst the skins, and the wine is lost. And so are the skins. But one puts new wine into fresh wineskins." The Gospel of the Lord. According to the story in Genesis, humanity ate from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. It's an interesting metaphor, eating, taking something into ourself. This is a metaphor about good and evil. Good and evil are things we pursue. Eating is a good thing. Eating itself is a sort of symbol for all pleasures. We pursue pleasure. We pursue pleasure, and pleasure tells us that some things are good, just as pain tells us some things are bad. We seek pleasure, avoid pain. But because we know the difference between good and evil, because we make that distinction, it's no longer a simple matter for us to pursue good and avoid evil. In the Garden of Eden, there were many good things to eat, easier to pursue pleasure, because the pleasurable was always good, the good was always pleasurable. Since then, it's a struggle. It requires thought, understanding, and because not everything pleasurable is good, not everything painful is bad, to pursue the good, to seek what is good, to avoid what is evil, often means abstaining from pleasure, or else enduring pain. Not because pain is good, but because we seek the good. And the good itself requires a great deal more than simply following our pleasures and avoiding pains. That's why fasting becomes part of any rational life. Fasting in the sense of abstention from any sort of pleasure. We abstain from a pleasure because the pleasure is not telling us what's good anymore. And that's normal life, that's true of any life. Much is achieved by people who have no great faith, but they achieve things because they discipline themselves. They exercise, they sustain pain, they force themselves to achievement. Religion, though, seems to be saying something more. Fasting itself is a witness to the fact that the true good is not simply available to us. We don't have it. In this gospel, we see that fasting is not by any means unique to Christianity. How could it be? It's not, in fact, even unique to Israel. The Pharisees, disciples fast. John the Baptist's disciples fast. Of course, other religions fast too. John the Baptist and the Pharisees fast because it's part of their tradition, the seeking of good and the avoiding of evil. And they fast commonly as a communal act, proclaim a fast. It's true there are examples of individuals fasting. King David, when his child was dying. Then he's a king, he represents Israel. Christ himself fasts alone in the desert. But then Christ fasting in the desert is preparing a new kingdom, a new people, a new world. And his fast is our fast. If we fast, we fast in Christ. We abstain from pleasure as a community, as a group. It's always in Christ. What's really different about the fasting of Christians? Well, we're told quite simply, No one can fast when the bridegroom is present, but the bridegroom is away, is absent. That makes our fasting a bit different from the fasting of Israel or the rest of the world. For Israel, at least it's clear that humanity seeks good and avoids evil. Christianity goes further. Because of the cross, because of the mystery of the cross, we don't simply see good and evil as opposites. Rather, evil becomes part of the good. It becomes part of the good because the good which we seek will only be fulfilled properly and completely when Christ returns. And as such, our fasting is part of the preparation for the great feast of his return, the fulfillment of humanity. And the evils we sustain in this world, even the evils we embrace as evil for the sake of good, those evils themselves are part of the good. Out of evil things, out of bad things, new and greater goods come. We might perceive that dimly in the Old Testament. Reason might tell us that. Only Christ really reveals the power of the cross, the power of that mystery of evil. So in a sense, the fasting of Christians is more intense. Not in terms of its amount, but in terms of how much we give up, or how often, or for how long. Rather, in terms of our willingness to accept real evil for the sake of the good. To accept the cross. And as such, our evil becomes part of the good which is to come. There's a line in the film Shadowlands, rather misleading film, but C.S. Lewis, a great Christian thinker, about his marriage and the death of his wife, which caused him immense grief. And in that film, I'm quoting from memory, Joy Davisman, the wife says, "The happiness now is part of the grief which is to come." It seems to be expected to be, or presented as, a profound line. I think it's profoundly wrong. Profoundly wrong because it inverts what Christianity says. The pain now is part of the happiness to come. Not just a pain sustained and then taken away from us, so we become happy in heaven. Forget the meaning of our life and it's all the terrible things of human life. Somehow they become part of heaven. I don't believe in heaven we forget. I believe in heaven we understand. We comprehend the meaning of Christ's work and purpose in this life. When the bridegroom returns, we will find that we've been preparing in grace, in hope, and by his power. A great feast, the feast of heaven. No fasting then, because no evil. No fasting, endurance, suffering, all of that will not be forgotten, because it's part of the happiness to come.